call the February 8th Committee of the Whole. It's unusual for us to say that, so it caught me unawares.
Yeah, sure.
To order, Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mayor Olson?
Here.
Alderman D'Andrea?
Here.
Alderman Mayer?
Here.
Alderman Wilhelm?
Here.
Alderman Taylor?
Here.
Alderman Barber?
Here.
And Alderman Nelson.
Excuse. Please rise and join the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Happy snowy day. We've got a good number of the firefighters here in support of our chiefs. Welcome, guys. And the police, the Fire and Police Commission chairman. That's good. The other two in the back are Natalie and James from Miller Communications, so they're here to offer support as well. There is no citizens comment period tonight. So we'll move on to I got the Plan Commission in front of me. We'll move on to item two, the fire department presentation related to current and future staffing considerations. Adam, before you get started, I've spoken to most of you about my concerns for the fire department staffing and the impact of levy limits. And we've all talked about referendums. What I want the chief to do tonight and what he will do tonight is give you a background on how we staff, how we operate, and the background on why we feel that there's a need to improve our staffing. So with that, Chief.
All right. I'm getting over a cold, and I'm going to try and get through this before
there's
I lose
a mint
my voice.
Your computer.
For your cold.
Is it warm is the question. Is it warm? That's
no, it's not. It's cool. It was only in my pocket for 10 minutes, so it's okay.
So I'll go through this sort of quickly, and then if you have specific questions, either chime in at the moment, or if you have questions at the end, that's fine too.
And I'm sure you're going to find a lot of this information is going to help you in your day-to-day dealings with your constituents. We just don't publicize this stuff, and it's good for you to know. Sorry, Adam.
So FFD consists of 46 highly trained, compassionate professionals. They really enjoy what they do. They care about what they do, and most of them wanted to be a firefighter or paramedic from a pretty young age. It's kind of a lifelong dream for a lot of people. The department serves 36,000 square people. You guys know Franklin's population, 34.5 square miles. Our paramedic ambulances also cover the village of Hills Corners as their primary ALS responders, so that increases our both our square mileage and our population base. Approximately 80% of our calls are EMS related. That's true pretty much for most departments that also provide EMS services. Our call for service record, and I'm going to explain that in just a second, reached over 4,000 calls this year for the first time in our history. That's up nearly 500 calls from last year. I'll kind of skip through mission, vision, and values. I think you're all aware of them, and they're on our website as well. So what we do, again, we do advanced level emergency medical services, fire suppression, fire prevention. That includes both public education and inspections. We're required by state law to inspect all public buildings at least once and in most cases twice per year. We do vehicle extrication. You know about the dive team. That's kind of unique for a department our size. We go out on the ice after animals or in the water after animals because if we don't do it, somebody else will try to do it, and they're not trained and equipped to do it the way we are. Basically, we do whatever people ask us to do. And a lot of times they don't know who else to call, or everybody else they have called to try and solve their problem has told them no. So we get drones out of trees. If you crash your riding lawnmower into your pool, we're the ones that they call. So we've literally had all those things happen. So how we do it, the fire service is structured in a paramilitary fashion, and I'll talk a little bit about calls for service because that's a lot of what this PowerPoint revolves around. A call for service, and we'll abbreviate CFS after this. Is anything we get called out the door to respond to? It could be just to help somebody up. It could be a service call to change batteries in their smoke detector. Or it could be a very complex rescue vehicle extrication or a large structure fire. So whatever we roll out the door, whenever we roll out to help somebody, that's a call for service. They can come in a variety of ways. It can be a 911 call. It can be a non-emergent call to the police or fire department. We could have our own people call something in from the field if they see something going on. And we do have walk-ins as well. Our response is based on a team response. That's a little different than police officers. You could probably put one officer in a car and put them around 27th and College, and they'd have a significant deterrent impact. That's them doing their job. It's different than how we do ours. We respond as a team to an event or incident. So our personnel are deployed in teams of two, on whether it be ambulance or engine, and we send two or more teams on every call, regardless of the call. This is our department structure. It's pretty common fire department structure. Myself and Assistant Chief Hayes are on a Monday through Friday schedule. Obviously, we come in after hours if there's incidents or events going on. The various colors at the bottom, the red, green, and blue, those are our on-shift personnel, and they're broken up into three rotating shifts so that one crew is always on duty 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They actually work 24-hour shifts. Our particular shift schedule is called a California rotation, in which they work 24 hours on, 24 hours off. They do that three times, and then they have a break of 96 off in the middle, 96 off, hours off. That works out to a 56-hour work week, and it's about 2,900 hours a year, so a little bit more than the 40-hour shift. Our personnel, like everyone else, they get vacations and holidays off, but we need to make sure somebody's here 24 hours, 7 days a week, so they kind of rotate those off days throughout the year. We require that they distribute their accrued vacation and holidays throughout the year, so it minimizes any one period like summer being, you know, several people off. So this is our actual whiteboard wall calendar, and you can see how that rotation works. This is actually January, and you can see green shift worked Monday, Wednesday, Friday the first week, and then they are off the next 4 days. That rotation continues like that for the entire year. And you could also see that we force people to take holidays in the first Wednesday of January. Is that when they want to take their vacation and holidays? Probably not, but we can't take on the overtime liability of just letting people post them when and as they wish.
Is that based on seniority, when they get to take
they
summer
rotate,
versus?
It starts with seniority, and they pick the days they want off, but we force them again to take them throughout the entire year. Days like you know, Christmas, Thanksgiving, those usually go to more senior guys, as well as the better weeks in summer when they have plans. So, yeah, it is a seniority-based system. These are our response areas. We have it broken up. Station 1, which is right here, covers the northern western portions of the city. There's four people at Station 1. In addition, the battalion chief also rides out of Station 1. That's more of a citywide position. He's not part of that station staffing. He's kind of the supervision of the entire city. Station 3 also has four people. That's right near the high school, 47th and Drexel. Also four personnel. Station 2 covers the area south of Hilltop, south of the 9100 block, and most of the southern third of the city. At this time, our staffing at Station 2 is two personnel. Our deployment, the battalion chief, as I said, is out of Station 1, but again, that's kind of a citywide position. Med 281 is a paramedic ambulance staffed with two firefighter paramedics. Engine 1 is staffed with a reserve or sworn paramedic and reserve or sworn lieutenant and one firefighter paramedic.
What's the difference between a reserve and a sworn lieutenant?
A reserve officer program means that they've gone through pretty extensive officer training. It's future candidates for lieutenant positions. And then we approve them to act in that role as lieutenant.
So it's a firefighter acting as a lieutenant.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you.
The thing about Engine 1, with two paramedics on it, we have a paramedic ambulance operating out of each of our three fire stations. If all three of those are busy, whether they committed to a call or in transit with a patient or on their way back from the hospital, then Engine 1's personnel switch on to our fourth ALS unit. So we do have four paramedic ambulances in service. That last one is kind of flex staffing, or some departments call it surge staffing. So when the need for it is there, the people staff it and it's ready to go. Engine 3, again, a sworn lieutenant. This one has to be a sworn. We don't let a reserve officer act at Station 3. That ensures there's always at least two officers in the city at any time. And Med 283 is staffed, again, two firefighter paramedics. Station 2 in the industrial park is staffed with two firefighter paramedics. Now, they cross-staff either Engine 2 or Truck 2. That means it's either one or the other is available to respond at any given time, and both are not available to go on a call. This would be the focus of a referendum, would be to increase our staffing at Station 2 to four personnel like the rest of our stations. What brought this to a head was a proposed senior housing that was looking at going in Nature's Nook. That area is very difficult for us to get a secondary unit to in a timely fashion, and it's, to be honest, it's not that easy to get to from Station 2 in the first place. So that created a situation where we would have had high users of EMS services and a high number of calls, but pretty poor response times to that area. So that's what really drove this.
What's the deal with the, I've always wondered, why is it Med 281, 82, 83? What kind of number system do we got here?
It's actually, 2 was our old Milwaukee County designation. Hales Corners was 6. I don't.
2 or 4 for Greendale?
4 was Greendale. They were just random numbers assigned by emergency management.
200.
But in the fire service, the 80 that follows that is pretty consistent nationwide in that 80 is an ambulance, 60 is an engine, 70 is a truck. So 281 is our old Franklin number 2. 80 means ambulance, and it's out of Station 1. So there is...
I always wonder what the heck that meant. It's like,
but let's talk about Tanker 295.
that we actually call Tender 1, which doesn't always sound great on the radio, but that's how you say it, I guess. So in 2017, we made some changes to our
response. Here comes Truck 2.
August of 2017, we made some changes to our response model. Our goal was improvement. Our goal was to improve the services we provide and kind of increase our readiness as far as non-EMS services. We've pretty much always been an EMS-focused department, and it's still what we do the best at. But we wanted to improve readiness for other types of incidents while still maintaining our very high level of ALS medical care. So what we did... we went to an all-ALS, all-paramedic ambulance response model. We used to have two basic-level ambulances that they couldn't treat, transport, evaluate patients at the advanced level. Since nearly all of our departments are paramedics, there was no longer a need to keep a basic-type unit in service because any ambulance can handle any call now, regardless of how severe, how serious or minor the patient is. We took those people that were staffing the BLS ambulances and redeployed them to Engines 1 and 3. Again, they're two-man crews on Engine 1 and 3, and they roll out the door in support of the ALS ambulances on every call. since every ambulance is a paramedic ambulance and every call is getting at least three paramedics, there's no need for dispatch to really triage or over question the 911 caller. That system was put in place back when there was maybe probably about eight paramedic units in the county, and you really had to evaluate what the caller needed and then send the appropriate resource. Now we're getting ALS care to every patient on every call, so call times can be sped up. So there is a industry standard that we are trying to meet. It's NFPA 1710. I won't get too far into it, but it is based on actual science. What 1710 is based on is the ability to attack a fire while it's still a room and contents fire and before it's actually the structure that's burning, in which case it's more dangerous, more difficult to put out. NFPA has established the following time benchmarks. From the time the dispatcher picks up a call, figures out what's going on, where it's going on, and tones out our units, that goal is 60 seconds. From the time our pagers in the station go off till we get dressed, get in the rigs, seatbelt in, and roll out the door is 80 seconds for fire calls. It's a little bit less for EMS calls. And then 1710 says that your fire stations should be situated so as to be able to service 90% of your response area within 4 minutes of travel time. So our overall goal we're trying to get here is 6 minutes and 20 seconds for a first due response of four guys to a structure fire. For EMS, it's kind of the same concept. It's based on the ability to get an effective crew there in time to save a person that's having a serious medical event, a heart attack, stroke, or most importantly, a cardiac arrest type event. That's based on how likely we are to be able to resuscitate a patient when we show up. If somebody goes into cardiac arrest, they still have electrical activity in their heart. We want to get there in time to defibrillate that and regain control and reestablish a meaningful rhythm. If it's longer than 6 minutes, that electrical activity deteriorates to the point where there's basically none left, and that those are what they call flatline patients, and we don't tend to get those back.
Nobody gets those back, generally.
It's really very rare to get a patient in asystole back. We need some sort of electrical activity to be able to kind of take control and restart the heart. So it's 6 minutes total for a basic unit to get there and start CPR and start defibrillating. And the goal in 1710 is that paramedic attention be there within 8 minutes. Now, with paramedics on all our rigs, we might say, yeah, we're getting our paramedics there in 6 minutes, but the reality is they're still doing the same tasks that the BLS would be doing. They're doing CPR compressions, and they're doing defibrillation. So until we get a full crew of four there, we can't be starting IVs, we can't be intubating, and we can't be giving medications. So for an ALS call, we really need four people there as fast as we can possibly get them there. So what does our actual response look like? I'll walk you through what a simple EMS call would look like. So let's say we're going to the high school for a report of a student having a seizure. Station 3, again, is right around the corner from the high school. Even so, Med 283 is going to respond with lights and siren. Engine 3, with their crew of two, is going to respond what we call Code 3, which is non-lights and siren. They're still going to get there in time to help bring equipment in. They're going to be there in time to help treat, evaluate, and package the patient for transport. Now, if this is a really sick patient and really critical, those guys can park engine 3 there, just leave it there, and one or more or all of them can get in the back of the ambulance and go with the patient if we need them to. For most calls, though, that engine crew goes back and returns to quarters, and they're available for the next call that comes in the area, whether it's in their area or another area. And again, those are two paramedics, at least one paramedic, so we can still treat, evaluate, and they just have to wait for another crew to transport that patient if a secondary call comes in. for truly serious calls like cardiac arrest, Battalion 2, our battalion chief on duty, also responds. And we now have our own Lucas came today, so.
Oh, good.
We might not give the loaner back, but we have our own.
Hey, but we don't know it won't hurt us.
So that's what a typical call looks like. In Station 2's area, it's a little bit different, though, because they don't have that support engine crew right with them in their area. So they're going to pick up a crew. Engine 1 will support 282 in the western half of their response area, and Engine 3 will roll down to support them in the eastern part of their response area. The problem is Station 2 is a little bit more difficult to support. Our calls at Station 1 and Station 3 tend to be clustered right around our stations, and we go east and west pretty easily. To get down to some areas in Station 2's area, it takes a little bit longer. The point is, all of our stations back up and interact with all of our other stations on a rotating basis. So when one station is busy, the reality is that all of our stations are busy.
Maybe this will come up in a future slide, but how often, if we had 4,100 calls last year, how often are we getting other municipalities to have to come in our city? How often do we have to go to other cities based on those numbers? Well, how many times, what percentages?
We're basically going almost once a day to Hills Corners to cover their primary paramedic unit. It's actually still pretty rare that other communities have to come to cover our calls. We basically have 5 units in that rotation, and they're going everywhere throughout the city to cover our call volume. And they get right up to that point where if another one comes in, we don't have anybody to send to it.